Hello and welcome to Pumped, the inside podcast by Schwalbe. I'm your host Tobias Wogon, and I'm talking here to Schwalbe athletes from different disciplines, from downhill to cross country or from triathlon to gravel racing. And today I'm talking to Rob Britton, who just won the Badlands race in Spain. And I want to know, how is it to win your first ultra distance race, and how is the preparation for the race and the recovery after it? All that in this episode of Pumped. Hey Rob, thanks a lot for taking the time to do the podcast with us. Where are you right now?
Yeah, so right now I'm sitting in our Airbnb in Granada, Spain.
Okay, so first of all, congratulations for the win on Badlands, one of the craziest races in the gravel calendar. How is your body today?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. oh man, the body is a wreck. It's definitely better, and like it's a world better than I'd say acutely right after the race. Like, you know, you finish and you have that initial elation where you're just, you feel so good to be done, you know, the suffering kind of stops and like your body, you just get that break. So you get the adrenaline, or what, I don't know if there's any adrenaline left, but you get that reprieve from discomfort. And then, you know, I was lucky enough to finish in a great time. You know, I think I finished around 11 o'clock at night, so I had the full night in bed. You know, my wife was there waiting with pizza and beer, so I had a nice meal. And then, you know, a hot shower, which anybody who's finished one of these things has, you know, a different experience in the shower. Mine was, you know, fantastic, but also, like, there's a lot of chafing involved. So, yeah, to your point about the question about the body, yeah, it's like, man, today is good, but the last couple of days have just been like, it's a blank. Like, it feels like both ages ago that I finished, and also like, oh, that was just like just yesterday, you know. And we were in the finishing town, and just like just having beers, watching other people finish, you know, seeing everyone that comes across the line, and it's like everyone's just shattered. Like, I don't think my story in that sense is unique. It's like Badlands pulls it out of you. Like, you have to push yourself, and man, like, yeah, from feet to toes, knees, like the chafing, your arms, your hands, your shoulders, your back, your neck, like pretty much anything is sore and achy.
Yeah, I mean, just finishing Badlands, it's probably a win, but doing it in the time you've done is really impressive. So how long it took from, okay, I finished the race, I'm still on a high, I'm super happy because I won it, to, oh man, I'm so sore, I want to die, like.
Honestly, yeah, I mean, it's like, it was a special experience because I was in the lead for a very long time, so I had time to kind of absorb it. I had a nice lead, so I was able to enjoy it. I didn't feel panicked or rushed, like even to the point where the last little bit, I was able to like back the pace off a bit until I knew the final was quite hard, so I saved a bit then, and then I kind of turned on, like, I don't want to say the afterburners because I don't think anybody has like extra matches at the end, but like what little energy I had left, I used on that final climb just to like give myself enough insurance in case anything happened on the descent that I could like correct it fast enough to still win the race. Yeah, you know, you finish and it's like, it feels really good. Like, winning is a rare thing for most people, obviously myself included. And, you know, winning your first like ultra distance event is pretty unique. And then one like this and having my wife there, and like, you know, Badlands is a race that I'd really wanted to do for like a few years now. And then, you know, to come here, do it, the conditions that we had, it was like all really unique. And like, I try to absorb that and like take advantage of like these situations and like these experiences and like actually like take it in. And then eventually, like you say, that goes away. And I woke up, I remember in the morning, and I could barely move. I went to the bathroom to take a pee. And I remember like coming out and I was like, my wife had already gone for breakfast, and this is nearly 10 o'clock in the morning now. And I hobbled back to bed and I just laid across our bed, and the water, like my bottle of water was on the other side of the bed, and I kind of crawled to barely reach it and just drank it and like just laid there and thought to myself, like, what have I done? Like, it felt like, I mean, it felt like I drank like 20 beers the night before or something and then just got beaten up. Like, I was like nauseous and dehydrated and sore and like, you know, everything's just like super swollen, like my knees, my feet. And, you know, kind of worked up the courage to go for breakfast and walked out and take a turn out of the hotel door. And the first thing I see is a set of like 10 stairs. And I just looked at it and like out loud, I'm like, ah, my nemesis, of course. And I was like hobbled down these things. And of course, my wife being the good sport that she is, just videotaped it all and laughing at me. So,
okay. Yeah. So that sounds, that sounds pretty funny, but it also sounds like you left everything on the track, and that is how you should win a race like this, probably. So,
yes.
Going back to your background, so where are you from and where you grow up, mountain biking or biking?
Okay, so it's kind of two parts. So I grew up in the prairies in Saskatchewan. In Canada. Mm-hmm. My hometown was Regina, Saskatchewan. It's like, yeah, little town in the middle of Saskatchewan, dead flat, you know, winter for 6 months of the year, windy the rest of it. super cold in the winter, unbearably hot, full of mosquitoes in the summer. And I think the tallest climb we have is a valley, and it's about, you know, 15 meters of elevation gain or something like this. And somehow, you know, I grew up, started like as most kids from the 90s on a mountain bike, ironically in a place that there's not a single mountain near us. You know, I was hooked, and at the time it was the only thing I was any good at, which is saying how bad I was at everything else. Cause I was terrible at cycling when I started. Like, so, it's just a testament to maybe like my stubborn ignorance or something like this, but that was it. And I was hooked, I think probably in grade 7 or grade 8. And then eventually cycling, once I finished high school, a couple years later, cycling did take me out indirectly to Victoria on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And that was at the time the center for the national team.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't any good. Certainly not good enough to be on the national team at the time, but that was where you had to be a cyclist. And, you know, I just made my mind up that I wanted to go there and do that. And I'd focus more on road racing at this point. Like, I didn't seem to have the technical skills, and growing up in Saskatchewan, like, you know, you were never going to get those really. Mm-hmm. So road seemed to be something I was just naturally a bit better at. And again, like, I wasn't that great, but I had, you know, just some grit to really stick with it. So coming out to Victoria, that's pretty much what happened. And I think I came out there on my 20th birthday. I think just fast, like, you know, worked my way through the ranks, you know. And I think when I was 25, I want to say, maybe turning 26, signed my first professional contract with Bissell Pro Cycling out of the United States. And yeah, things just sort of progressed from there.
You moved from a place with barely any mountain to one of the, I would say, center of mountain biking or cycling in North America. You got from, I wasn't really good, to I signed my first pro contract in 5 years.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good story. Yeah.
And also stopped. I didn't, ironically, moved out to the West Coast and didn't touch a mountain bike. I kid you not. Didn't touch a mountain bike for probably 10 years. I left Saskatchewan when I was, 20. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ride a mountain bike on Vancouver Island or in Victoria until I was probably 28 or 29 years old. I borrowed one from a good friend of mine, Max Plaxton, who's like previously one of Canada's best mountain bikers. And I just reignited my love for it. And it's like, that was probably one of these catalysts that just started like my excitement for off-road more and more. And like things grew from there. But yeah, it was funny that I moved to the Mecca of mountain biking and just didn't do it at all. Like focused fully on road racing. Like, and the road riding there is world-class as well. But it took a while to get into the off-road scene. And now, it's like,
Yeah, that's pretty funny because these days we see you more and more on the mountain biking and racing mountain bikes, right? Are you more a mountain biker who is also graveling now, or are you a road rider who is graveling and mountain biking? I know these things are always hard to answer, huh?
No, it's good. I guess I would identify as probably, I'm a road cyclist. Like, you know, I did it for 10 years mm-hmm. of professional, and then it that's my thing now. Like, and I love road riding, I love drop bar stuff, and that's absolutely like, I guess what I find most at home is that. And then mountain biking is something I absolutely love, and it's what I've become really passionate about. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's like these guys who like mountain bike are like, they're just so much better than me. Like, it's stuff like I practice and I get better at it, but like, you know, they have done it for, you know, a decade.
Yeah.
And or more, right? Like the time that I've honed my skills on a road bike and like moving a bike, you know, on the hoods or in the drops, they've been doing the same thing, going down drops or like going over doubles and like how to ride a greasy set of like routes. Yeah. And like my brain doesn't comprehend this like skill set, and I get better and better. And
yeah, but it's really hard to close that gap, I think. Huh?
Exactly, because theirs is just, it's reaction. Like, they're reacting to something where I'm thinking and having to, like, consciously make these choices where they're just going through, like, an automated motion. So, yeah, for sure, I'm a drop bar racer that absolutely loves riding and racing off-road. Mm-hmm. But for sure, like, drop bars before flat bars.
And if you have a mountain bike race in Canada or wherever you race and a gravel race, what is the difference for you on the race day?
Sorry, say that again.
What is the difference between a mountain bike race where you compete and the gravel race? What is a different approach for you, or the different mindset when you on the starting line?
A mountain bike race, I'm usually a bit more nervous in the sense of like, okay, I know I have to limit my losses in the technical stuff. Like that's a weakness that it's hard to correct. Mm-hmm. And in a gravel race, it's more so, it's like, okay, how can I go about like maximizing my strengths, and like, where can I minimize any time loss to guys who maybe are a bit more fit or, you know, just on form at that event. It's like, okay, because I view that as more of a road race, because gravel racing is so fast now. It is really just a bunch race for a lot of it. So you are really, you're really on it to, it's like you're racing like a road race. Like it's like being in a breakaway kind of the whole time, right? Because there's not teams per se. Whereas a mountain bike, a lot of it, at least for me, I have a hard time tracking someone through single track at high speed. So it's like I spend a lot of amount of my grace by myself. So usually on the climbs, I try to throttle it as hard as I can. And on the descents, just try to limit my losses as much as I can and hope that I make the guys tired enough on the climbs that they can make a mistake on the descents. And that time gap is enough for me. So I guess I'm more nervous for the technical stuff in mountain biking, but maybe a bit more relaxed overall because it's all new and exciting to me. Like I haven't done many mountain bike races in my whole life. Mm-hmm. Whereas the gravel stuff is like, it's a different feeling before because I kind of know what to expect, at least like in the shorter version of stuff. Like obviously the ultra stuff is a completely different mm-hmm. game. Like I've done a single ultra distance gravel race. So it's like, maybe that's a bit different for me now, but yeah, the short distance stuff it just reminds me so much of road racing in that sense. So I kind of know what to expect and I know like, you know, how things are kind of going to play out like inevitably. Whereas a mountain bike race, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to go on. Like eventually someone's going to do something. And then mountain bikers tactically do stuff that just doesn't make any sense in my head. I'm like, I don't know why they would do that, but they do it and it seems to work out for them. But it's just, yeah.
Yeah, that is so funny, yeah? That's really cool. And especially, I mean, gravel racing changed a lot over the last years, and there are a lot of different formats where you have Unbound, which is a long one-day race, and then you have Badlands, which is an ultra gravel race. Could you explain the difference in training for these different... these different formats, because you have done Unbound and Badlands, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like Unbound is probably, it's such a weird one because it's so fast and competitive now. It's not like it was, I'd say, and I didn't do it before. It's just like, you can look at power files and like at time gaps and things like this mm-hmm. and extrapolate. Unbound 5 or 7 years ago was kind of like what Badlands is now. Mm-hmm. Like you had a group of people go out and then eventually it would just blow to pieces. And then you just have people coming in ones and twos, these huge time gaps and all this kind of stuff. Whereas like, you know, and that's kind of now what Badlands is like. So, and now Unbound, Unbound now is like, very competitive and it's very fast. Like it starts out the same as any other gravel race. It might be like, you know, 120 kilometers long, except it's three times that, or nearly three times that. It's 327 kilometers. But it starts out like it, you know, you're only racing for 3 hours and you're thinking to yourself, how the hell are we going to do this for, you know, six? Like we have to do this for 9 hours. And then there's like the finish, like, and it's relentless. So preparing for that is just an enigma to me. Like I think going into it fit and fresh and like just robust is like the best way to do it. But you know, this year it's like you can be taken out in the first 10K because of mud. So fitness mm-hmm. almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Getting ready for Unbound. I mean, that's the getting ready for Unbound is really the queen's like pinnacle of gravel. I still think that is kind of like the true world championships of the actual sport.
Yeah.
It's funny getting ready for Badlands because it's so long. And I, like, as I mentioned, I've done a few really long distance FKTs between like 700 and, you know, 1,000 or 1,100 kilometers. And I had an idea of the damage it does to your body and the fatigue during the event on your mind, which is obviously massive. And the biggest thing for these ultra events, in my opinion, is coming into it like physically and mentally as fresh as possible. You need to be excited mm-hmm. and relaxed when you get to the start line.
Yeah.
Because it makes a big difference, I think, if you're not, like it every bit of fatigue you carry to that start is, you know, an extra match you don't have to burn in the last 100K or the last 200K. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that makes a big difference when you're talking about like 30, 40, 50, 60 hours of racing. Like, these are just crazy numbers to me. It's like, you know, 10 years ago to me, I would have just laughed at me if I, like, it's like, oh yeah, you're going to get into ultra stuff. It's like, this is what I made fun of people for. And now it's like what I get really excited about. Like, honestly, the training I did for it, I had a great block of summer racing, but it was like exciting stuff that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I did a BC bike race, you know, a 7-day mountain bike stage race on Vancouver Island. I did Leadville and then Steamboat a week apart, and effectively spent nearly 2 weeks at altitude. So I kind of did this like just spur, like, what's the word? Basically, I did an altitude camp without actually thinking about doing an altitude camp. It just sort of happened. And then I realized it after the fact, like, oh, this is actually probably really good prep, you know, mm-hmm. 2 weeks above six or like above 2000 meters. Yeah. And then a week down at sea level, you know, a lot of travel in between. I had to go back from Steamboat back to Victoria all the way over to Spain. But then, you know, Girona leading up to the event, I was just having beers. Like, we were, Ricky and I were fully on vacation mode. Like, this is her first time to Girona. So we ate a bunch of really nice food. I probably gained like 5 pounds that week, just eating and drinking. I mean, you know, I probably burnt 15 off in the race, so it's fine. But honestly, it's like, I really enjoyed the time leading up to it because I knew how deep I was going to go in the event.
Yeah.
Like, that I was going to push it really far. And
that, this is super interesting that, I mean, you wouldn't expect this. I mean, you would expect that you're coming, looking for your diet and everything is on point. But you say it's so important to get there relaxed and having a good time before. So this is really interesting, the way you get into the race mode. So this is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I don't have a ton of experience in this particular part of the sport, but from like the little bit of experience I have had so far, that just seems to make so much sense. Is just coming into it, just like beaming with freshness and excitement, and it was interesting. Like, one of the things I noticed, and obviously Ricky noticed as well, was I was really kind of like nervous. Leading into it, like the day or two before, it was like I couldn't figure out what's going wrong. I'm like, what is, like, why would I feel like this? Like, this is not how I normally respond to a race. And it was pretty wild, just that excitement that was coming from.
Badlands is a super special race. I mean, having Unbound on the one side, which is super fast, which is an official world championship of gravel. What is it that makes Badlands so special?
Yes, I mean, Badlands is, I mean, how I see it is just sort of this, it's kind of like an entry level ultra distance event. It's unique because it is a lottery. You have to apply to get in. Not every, like, they get, you know, thousands of people apply to get into the event now. It's a big deal, just getting into it and having the opportunity to, you know, go about the journey you're going to take to go through Badlands. Because it's a journey. It's not just, you know, you don't just roll up to the start line and get through it. And it is stunning. Like, it is a beautiful, it's as beautiful and breathtaking as it is like relentless and difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, and this year it was, I think, even more unique because we had such crazy weather. Like, they had just this insane rainstorm that, like, just pulverized us the first day, which is hilarious because they don't ever get rain here. Like, they got mm-hmm. more rain in a day than they had in the previous like 5 months. And, to the point where they had to modify the course because they were worried about like this clay basically that they make pots out of, that if we rode through it, it's like our bikes would just like turn into like concrete and we wouldn't be able to ride them. So they had to make like an actual change to the course. You know, stuff like that. Like that's a pretty unique thing. And yeah, the ride itself, it's something else. Like the first, just the way they build the course, that last 200 kilometers or so, it's kind of funny because of these distances, like 200 kilometers in of itself is such a massive distance, but you're like, oh, you know, it's just the final, you've already done 550 kilometers. What's 200 more? And the final 200 of this event is just, there's such a sting in the tail. It's predominantly uphill. I think you do 4,000 or 5,000 meters in the last two. Yeah, I think it's 5,000 meters or something like this, maybe six in the last 200 kilometers. And the grades you cover to do that are just lethal. That's probably one of the biggest things is like, holy cow. I was cursing on some of the climbs in the end because you're just going up like 25% for like a kilometer. So, you're just creeping up this thing. It's unbelievable. So,
they really want to break people, huh? In the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, it's an experience, and I think that's what makes it so special. Is it is really just something else out there, like, and you know, we got, like I say, this year was special because part of the experience we had was that rainy weather and. You know, and then we did have the proper like Spanish, like just blistering heat on day two. You know, I was doing a climb and it was like, I think 36 or 38 degrees in my head unit. Like, and you're just creeping, not a breath of wind, where the day before, you know, it was 18 degrees pouring rain and like 30 or 40 K an hour, like headwinds. So it's just both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably really hard. Huh? I mean, if you're expecting heat and then you're starting your first day in pouring rain, that could be super hard mental wise. Or was it easy for you
because
it's more the temperature you're used to and it's not super hot?
Oh no, for sure. It was I think for me, just because of my road racing background, like, you know, you're just thrown into like, oh, hey, it's 5 degrees and raining today. You just get at it. Mm-hmm. Or, and also, you know, I live in a pretty rainy climate with cold winters. Mm-hmm. But, and again, because I've trained for the heat a lot over my career, I was used to being able to balance that. But I did use that as kind of an advantage, I think, over potentially some of my competitors, because I knew that would take a lot out of people. And actually, I think another big part of it was just kind of, talk about this a lot, is the like the chafing and discomfort and like the chamois, just because you're wet for like 24 or 36 hours straight. Mm-hmm. Like skin doesn't do well in that condition. Like under any, it's like, it doesn't matter who you are. It's like your skin just doesn't like to be wet for a day straight. And, you know, wet and dirty and salty is like, you know, probably the worst combination. So that was not an ideal situation, but for sure everyone had to go through it, and that was just something else. And I think it was, for some people, that would have made a huge difference, like, you know, preparing exclusively for, in the past it's been like 45 degrees for this thing, and you know, this year it peaked for me probably around 40, and the low temperature was probably around 10 degrees and raining. So it's a pretty big delta.
Definitely. Yeah. So that sounds pretty hard, to be honest. I mean, as you said, I mean, especially when you're training and your whole preparation is for heat, because I mean, you're in south of Spain, there it should be hot there. And then you're starting in the rain. Did you had to make any changes to your bike when you see the weather forecast and see, okay, it will be raining in the beginning of the race? Or what is the perfect setup for this race?
No, like going into the race, the bike setup was, it was dialed. I didn't change anything. Like the weather wasn't going to change anything. The only thing, I mean, maybe if it got, like more wet and maybe switch to just like a G1R, but realistically there's no point because it would just pack more mud. The G1R, like it for me, like the RS is just such a superior tire for just with everything I do, because the fish scale, and I'd put fresh tires on, you know, I had brand new 45s sent to me, and when they're brand new, it's like that fish scale works so well. And it's like, so it's like there's no point in changing anything. The gear was good. Just leading up to the race, I had waxed my chain previously, and then I have like kind of like just a touch-up treatment from Silica, and I just put on, you usually have to apply it once every like 100 or so K, and I was putting it on kind of every 24 hours leading up to the race, just to basically maximize the coating on the chain to just increase longevity, because when it's going between super dry and super like wet and sandy, like it doesn't matter what you have in the chain, it's like you're gonna push your drivetrain to the limit. So that was my biggest concern, was just making sure the drivetrain was like as dialed as possible. And then my clothing selection, I think the biggest thing I changed is like I took a vest with me. Everything else was kind of pre-planned. Like I had, you know, warmer jackets, like a Castelli puffy, and then a Castelli shake dry jacket. But I was on the fence with whether or not to bring the Profeto. Like it's kind of like a Gabba vest. And when I saw the forecast in the morning and saw that it was like, okay, it is gonna rain. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, rain for sure. I just grabbed that and put it in my pocket for the start. And sure enough, about an hour and a half or 2 hours into the race, it started to rain. I put that on and didn't take it off, I think, until probably Almeria or something like this, when it was finally warm enough and dry enough that I didn't need a vest and I was not worried about it raining anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, pack list and bike, it's nothing changed.
Yeah. Okay. So then you had first day rain, second day it was really hot, and you had a pretty long solo finish. So when did you know that you probably will win this race? At what time?
This will sound crazy, maybe. I didn't look. So I had my phone on airplane mode, and I didn't look at the tracker until about 105K from the finish.
Okay.
So I knew I was in the lead. There was nobody in front of me, and there was a few sections on the course where you can see quite a ways behind you. Like these big, huge climbs that you can look back across the valley, and you're like, well, that's probably at least 20 minutes, and I don't see anybody. So I'm like, I probably have at least a 20-minute gap in second place. I don't know who that is, but that's, the gap seems reasonable. I also knew I couldn't really ride much faster, and I wasn't, and I probably wasn't going to ride much slower. So I was like, okay, well, I guess this is just is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So at about, at the final stop, I did check my phone. And that was more just to make the decision of like, can I afford to take like a sit down lunch and just like, or a dinner and like actually enjoy this meal, or do I have to go again? And when I looked, I think I saw I had like a 24-kilometer gap or something like this to second and third. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, that's like probably close to 2 hours. Like, yeah, I can afford to actually like take a breather here and have like, I just had like a bocadillo, like a potato salad or something, and a couple Fantas. And then that was the only time I really stopped and like relaxed a bit in the whole race. And then, that was it. And that's when I kind of like, I'm like, okay, things are looking really good. Like it's in a position now for me to lose the race. Like this is really great. And then I started to cramp on that really steep climb kind of in the last 100 kilometers, and I started to get pretty worried at that point. And then I just started mixing electrolyte tabs in my bottles, and every town I went through, I would stop and fill up a bottle, put an electrolyte tab in, and like smash it right away. And like if you look at like even my the file of the race, you'll see in the last 100 kilometers, I bet you I stopped 6 or 7 times for a couple minutes, and it would just be to mix a bottle, drink it, ride a bit slow for a bit, let that absorb, and go again, because I knew it's like you have to keep moving. Mm-hmm. But if you push full gas at that point, it's like you can, like if you really cramp and it, like you go super deep, like your legs will just give out, and then like obviously you're not going anywhere then.
Yeah.
So it made more sense to just back. Like I had a nice gap. Like it made more sense to just chill out, relax, like correct the problem, and then like really dig deep in the final, whatever it is. Like I think 40K, you kind of go through this town, and then you have one last big set of climbs, and then a descent into the finish. So I figured I would save it up till then, and then kind of empty the tank of like whatever I had left. So yeah, I knew I had it at about 100K to go. It was mine to lose. I got worried in that 100K as I started to cramp and the grades were just so extreme. And then in the last, I think I checked again at the top of the final climb and saw I still had like well over an hour, and I'm like, yeah, okay, we're good. Like, don't run into any rocks in the downhill.
So, but how is it mentally? I mean, you having this high when you see, okay, I have a 2-hour lead that should be fine. So I chill a little bit, I do it a little slower, and then you're starting to cramp. What does it make with you on the mental side?
There's definitely I was prepared for it because of just road racing and like having that like knowledge of like pace strategy and like mm-hmm. gap like management from like, you know, so much stage racing and how like it's not easy to close big gaps. But there's definitely that moment of panic because it's just you're not thinking like straight, right? Like a logical person would like explain to you, it's like, well, if there's 45 kilometers left and you have a 1-hour gap, it's effectively for them to close that gap, they have to be going nearly twice as fast as you. Like, do you think anybody can go twice as fast as you deep into this race? No, that's a crazy thought. But because you're not thinking logically, like, that's how I think of it now. It's like, obviously it's not going to close that. It's like, no, just keep doing your thing. You'll be just fine. But when you're cracked out of your mind, you're like, oh my God, like he's coming. Like, what do I do? Okay. I just got to, don't make any mistakes. And then it's like, then you just basically go back and forth between like what little logic you have left in your head. Be like, no, you're good. Like, okay, just time this next 12 kilometers and see how long it takes. It's like, oh, that was 45 minutes. Okay. You have 45 minutes. Like, that's a big gap. He's not going to be able to close it. Then, but that was like when I, so there's sort of this like internal battle inside my head of like basically going back and forth of, oh, you're all good too. Yeah, you might need to actually like dig a bit deeper on this final climb. Mm-hmm. And then I figured there wasn't much to lose if I was feeling good at the bottom to just like, yeah, to go all in.
It's pretty impressive that you still had enough oxygen in your brain to really think that way, because I mean after so many hours of really digging deep and not sleeping and not eating properly, it's, I mean, you can really fall into a hole. And
for sure.
And this hole is probably deep. I mean, if you're thinking, okay, he will come, he will catch me. And then the cramps getting worse and worse. So it's pretty cool that you have these experience and manage it to manage your speed and go to the finish. That's pretty impressive.
No, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of funny what goes on in that monkey brain of mine.
Yeah. So on a normal race, if it's Badlands or a road race, what you did before, you crossing the finish line and there's a big party and there's a big celebration of the winner. What is the party and the celebration of the winner at Badlands? Because the only picture of the finish line I've seen from you was you with a really happy face and a pizza in your hand.
Yeah, so honestly, it's what I like about Badlands is, and this is really cool, I did cross the line before anybody else. Like, that's awesome. But they celebrate everybody who comes in the same way. And that's, I think, what makes it special. Everyone that comes across the line gets that same high five from the organizers. You know, they get the same finisher jersey, the same finisher's medal. And that's because everyone, like, really suffers. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it unique versus, like, road racing, where, you know, the winner is celebrated massively and everyone else just goes back to their bus and, like, faces the, like, oh, how could I have done better, you know, scenario. Whereas this was pretty unique that it's just, like, everyone gets that same kind of, like, experience at the end. Because everyone's just, like, just wrecked. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. I mean, for me, it was, like, having Ricky there was massive, like, really special. Mm-hmm. Kind of talked about it afterwards. She's a bit of a good luck charm, it seems, because every race she's gone to so far, I think, pretty much won or, like, had the best results I've had at that particular race. I was like, you know,
that's good.
We might have to make a habit of this, but yeah, the thing is, too, it's tough because you see, like, in everyone's face, it's like they're excited and stuff, like the organizers and everyone at the finish, but at the same time, everyone's been awake for 2 or 3 days. Plus, it's like, I know these guys have been stressed and nervous and, like, working around the clock just to pull the start off. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, they haven't slept for days. So, like, they're stoked and, like, oh, that was really cool. Like, you know, that's great. Awesome. Congrats. And then I think, like, they're also in the realization of, like, all right, one down, 299 to go. Like, going to be here for a couple of days. Like, yeah. This is the thing. So, yeah, for me, it's great, you know, just sit down, have a pizza and a beer and just relax. And that stuff, man, is just, like, that's so sweet. And, like, I've won some races in on the road side of things and had some celebrations or we've done stuff. And you're just, like, this is so much more, I don't know if intimate's the right word, but, yeah, it's special in a different kind of way because it is just you out there. It was just you alone by yourself. Like, it takes a team of people to get you to that point for sure. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I couldn't have done this obviously by myself and certainly not without, like, my sponsors and, like, the support of people around me. But when you're out there, it really is an unsupported event. So when you cross the line, it was just you who got you there. So it's just, like, it's not a visible thing other than that photo, I think, did a pretty good, like, did it justice, is in that you see that that elation, like, that is the best way I can put it. Like, you just feel so good when you cross the line and you're, like, you're proud of yourself and, like, it's just like you see everyone there and it's just like it feels good and you're just so happy it's done. So it's like and you're too exhausted to party anyways, so it's just like, all right, I think I'll just, like, sit down and relax for 2 or 4 days.
yeah, it's so. It seems like a really, really cool event, and yeah, congrats again that you won it. It's really, really nice having this in your bag. Do you have any other plans in mind, or your first one to recover and then think about other other plans?
Yeah, I think recovery is a pretty big priority right now. yeah, it's always a journey after this stuff, man. Like, I've done lots of stage races, obviously. I've done huge training blocks, all this stuff, like, plenty of big rides. But these things are still, like, full on different, and the recovery is different than, like, what I'm used to. So yeah, definitely right now, recover first, just see what happens, and then we'll see what comes next. I do have already across Andes in November, which mm-hmm. is actually funny enough, another Schwabi event.
Yeah.
In so it's down in Patagonia, which is pretty exciting. It was one I hummed and hawed about, but I'm pretty curious about it, to be honest. I know even less about it than I did Badlands, and I didn't know very much about Badlands. I just knew I wanted to do it, and it looked really cool. So that's the next one on the list. And gosh, I hope I'm recovered by the time I get there, because yeah, I was told today by a buddy that it takes 1 week per 24-hour period of racing to recover from these things, which is like, oh, that's like 10 days mm-hmm. of recovery before I feel like normal. I'm like, and I kind of stopped to think about it and like the stuff I've done in the past. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's pretty accurate, actually. Yep.
Okay.
So in about a week's time, I should probably be pretty stoked to ride again. But right now my bike's packed in the bag already and I have no concern or interest in riding when I'm in Portugal. I think I'll probably just leave it in the bag till I get back to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then starting training again and go to the Andes, which is probably also, I think it's a really, really amazing event riding through through Patagonia with all the, it's different, but definitely one of the races, of the nicer races in the world of ultra endurance.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that one. I saw it last year and it's just something like, Patagonia is Patagonia. Like everyone knows about it. It's stunning. Yeah. And that's a big part of this sport now is it gets to take me to places that I've, cycling's always taken me to places I've never been to before, but now they're places that I'm choosing to get to go to. And that's very, very exciting to me.
That's nice. Hey, Rob, thanks a lot for your time. And I hope we talk again when you're back from Patagonia with another win.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be amazing.
And thanks a lot for taking the time and talk soon. Bye-bye.
Great. Yeah, thanks so much, Toby. See you.
Bye.